Welcome to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hotchner, and I am crazy about cats and the people who care for them. I'm here every week with answers to your questions about living with your kitty. My number is 888-429-5471. I want to thank my sponsors. I've invited these companies to be here because I believe in them and use them myself. I hope you'll show your appreciation for their support by becoming a customer yourself. And Whole Life Pet will send you a free sample box of freeze-dried protein treats for cats and dogs if you send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com. You can also send me any questions to radiopetlady@gmail.com. There's a whole week's worth of wonderful live pet shows I co-host on our own Radio Pet Lady Network. Stay tuned for Dr. Donna on The Expert Vet right after this show. Cat Crazy is a production of Eight Paws LLC, which is solely responsible for its content. My number again is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. I'd love to hear from you. And guess what treat I have for you guys tonight? My co-host tonight is the most interesting veterinarian, Jason Nicholas, the preventive vet. Dr. Nicholas, welcome to the show. I cannot wait to learn more about you and how you prevent problems in dogs and cats and your whole life. But before you even say hello, we got to say hi to Lottie and Margo, your adorable daughters, most particularly Andrea. We are so grateful to your wife, their mother, for hanging out with them so you can do this show. So we really appreciate it, Andrea. Thank you so much, and welcome to the show, Jason.
Thanks very much for having me, Tracy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's so fun. I learned about you from, of all things, LinkedIn, and I thought, what a cool guy. You were an emergency and critical care vet, but most exotic about you is that you trained at the Royal Veterinary College in London.
Yeah.
Now, can we talk about that for a minute?
Oh,
and I just want to tell you guys,
yeah,
if you're out there with questions, don't let us stop you. While we're chitter-chattering, 888-429-5471, any questions at all about your cats, and we don't even mind if you squeeze in a dog question, but we're trying to be cat crazy. Why the Royal Veterinary College? That's so grand.
It was a fantastic opportunity and a fantastic experience. It just presented itself as I was in the midst of my applications to vet school. The Royal Veterinary College over in London actually got their accreditation from the AVMA. And I grew up loving to travel. And as many people who are looking to get into vet school do, you know, I had a couple rounds of applications in and kept getting close and whatnot here in the States. And then this opportunity opened up, and it was a fantastic opportunity. And so I applied and got in there and I'd say the best 5 years of my life, but actually now that I've got my little girls,
That's right, but it was pretty amazing until then. How different is the attitude may not be the right word, to pets or to medical care in England, socialized medicine country that maybe is a lot less invasive in the kinds of things that they do for people in medical care, just because I think partly the economics and partly stiff upper lip or something.
I think that was really one of the most interesting things is that because they have socialized healthcare for people, you know, they don't have this kind of, I guess, bad taste in their mouth for health insurance. And so a lot more people over in the UK actually have pet insurance, which
That's
meant
right.
that
statistically way more than most countries in Europe, way more than America.
Yeah, unfortunately, the proportions are growing here, which I think that they need to do because the costs can be quite high, and it's a great safety net. But what that meant over there is that more and more pet owners would enable you to do some of the more advanced diagnostics that you needed to do on their pets. So things like MRIs and CT scans and more involved surgeries and, you know, traumas. There were certainly fewer what we call economic euthanasias because people had that safety net of pet insurance, which I'm hoping that more and more people will start taking up here in the U.S.
I've been a big flag waver for pet insurance, and people seem baffled by the concept that you pay the vet and then the insurance company pays you.
Right.
The vet doesn't have any relationship with the pet insurance company, and we want it that way. We don't want it to become like Kaiser Permanente, HMO.
Correct. You don't want managed care.
Yes, that's right. You don't want an insurance company to tell the veterinarian what he or she can or cannot do.
No, and sadly, there are some companies that do that. So people do need to do their research.
That's right.
You know, speak with their vet. There's a great veterinarian down in Tennessee. His name is Dr. Doug Kenny. He's unaffiliated with any pet insurance companies. He's got a great blog that teaches people about pet insurance and how to be discerning consumers.
Oh, I love that. Is it K-E-N-N-Y?
K-E-N-N-E-Y, I believe.
Cool. Pet insurance smart man.
Yes.
I've written a bunch about it, but maybe people will take Dr. Doug's advice more. But how about the medical training for veterinary school? Is there a different kind of focus, a different point of view? You don't know because you didn't go to vet school in America,
but I think
it would just be somehow maybe different in an interesting way.
No, I mean, I've got plenty of friends who went to school, you know, did their vet schooling here. And, you know, when you sort of compare notes of the experience, I think, well, far and away, I think my experience was, I wouldn't say less stressful, but it was certainly much nicer. I feel like the Brits have a much nicer approach of work-life balance. I think most countries, you know, have a better approach than we do.
I agree.
But because we didn't have, you know, four exams every week, you know, it meant that we could also take some time to really digest the stuff. And I'm not suggesting that the U.S. vet students don't know their stuff, because boy, do they.
Sure.
But I was able to kind of relax a little bit more and take advantage
That's
of being
nice.
In Europe and travel. But still, when it came down to it, AVMA said it's an equivalent program. And given where I did my internship at the Animal Medical Center in New York, which is one of the most highly sought after
That's
internships.
Right.
You know, I got initially a residency in emergency and critical care out here in Portland. I certainly was not at a disadvantage following my program. The Royal Veterinary College was an absolutely wonderful experience and a great education.
And a nice calling card. How many other Americans were lucky enough to squeak in at that moment?
We had in my year, which was the first year that got accepted after AVMA accreditation, there were, I think, about 25 North Americans. So that included about four or five maybe Canadians. And so, you know, I mean, it's, you know, make no mistake, it was a lucrative thing for the AVMA accredited schools. So for the Royal Veterinary College, they loved having us overseas students. Not just because of the money that we brought over, but because of the, and I'm probably going to insult a lot of my British classmates, but because of the maturity level.
A different energy.
We had already been through undergrad, so we kind of got some of that stuff out of our system before vet school, whereas they all started 18. But these are some of the brightest kids.
They do?
They go right from what's called A-levels. It's like an advanced high school.
Oh, my God.
Undergrad. They go right from A-levels right into veterinary school or law school or medical school.
I never knew that.
They're young, but boy, are they bright. I mean, it's the creme de la creme of the, you know, of the population.
Yeah, and the truth is that the undergraduate education in England, one can say this very clearly, is better than whatever the greatest prep school is in America by a mile. I mean, it's just a better education, deeper, more intense, more serious. But they're 18 years old and they go to vet school. Wow, they must have been doing a lot of that crazy stuff that freshmen and sophomores do in American colleges.
They definitely were. But yeah, at the end of the day, a large proportion of them wind up graduating and quite a few of them excelling. And so what the AVMA accreditation did for them is it allowed a lot of them to go on for postgraduate training in the U.S. following their degree in England. And I know a lot of my classmates and friends came over here and did residencies in emergency critical care, surgery, internal medicine. So it's really improved the profession, you know, internationally by the AVMA accreditations, you know, because of learning.
And of course, you got great residencies too. I mean, American Animal Medical Center and then critical care. That's really cool. I'm wondering, I had heard, and I don't know if it's true, those of you listening, you're listening to Cat Crazy. I'm talking to the preventive vet, Dr. Jason Nicholas, who has a great website, The Preventive Vet. He is was an emergency and critical care vet who decided he wanted to prevent emergencies instead of treat them, which I love. And we're going to talk about, like, what are your top five that you're so glad are preventable. But I'm wondering about the relationship. And I know you're there, Robin, covered in cat hair. You hold on, darling, because we want to talk to you. But I just want people to get to know Dr. Jason a little bit more. I want to get to know him a little bit more because I'm hoping that he'll be hanging out with us here with some frequency. Please, Andrea, please. As the weeks and months go on, because y'all with cats need to be able to learn that there are so, I would say almost there's more things, problems you can prevent in cats than in dogs, and that a massive amount of not just emergencies, but lifelong chronic illnesses could be avoided and prevented. And that sort of fits into my question to you. Is there a hand-in-glove relationship with the veterinary profession in England for small animals with pet food companies the way there is in America, where they're absolutely intertwined, woven in, inextricable from the training and teaching?
Yeah, I think sadly, you know, it's expensive to train vets. It's, you know, just like it's expensive to train doctors. And so that money has to come from somewhere. And already, I mean, vet students graduate with six-figure debt and the earning potential is nowhere near what it is in the
human
world. That's
right.
So some of that, the costs of the education are written off by, you know, the pet food companies, the drug companies. You know, they sponsor, you know, residencies and things of that nature. So, you know, there's always going to be that collaboration, you know, those partnerships.
Yep.
You know, the trick is keeping an open mind and, you know, for us as vets and even on the human side for the doctors to kind of see through the marketing and really just focus on the data and the science and the response of your patients.
I think that that's a good point. And that's and put very diplomatically. At the end of the day, if you just step back and you only went to your anatomy class, so they taught you that A, a cat is not a little dog, and B, it has a totally different digestive system, and C, it probably comes from kind of like a desert background, and it's really only genetically and physiologically set up to be a carnivore, an obligate carnivore. If you knew that and you understood those were the facts, like the earth is round.
Right.
Is there something about that dry food for cats that they teach in vet school? It's like, we're going to teach you the world is round, but now hang on. We're going to go back to it being flat because that works better for us, you know?
Right.
It's like
right.
you can just take your head out of the bag and go, okay, so they don't even have the digestive enzymes for plants and fiber.
Well, they just, you know, they don't handle it as well, you know, and I think that more and more vets, you know, an internal medicine specialist and nutritionists are starting to realize that, you know, there is a connection between what we're feeding them, you know, and some of the more chronic, long-standing diseases that they're getting. And I think certainly there are vets out there that are standing up and saying, look, you know, obesity is a huge problem in the pet population, both for cats and dogs. And it's multifactorial. You know, it's people being, you know, busy and feeling bad that they can't spend a lot of time with their pets. And so they resort to treats, and all the treats have a lot of fat and salt because that's what makes them tasty. And, you know, but it's also the diets that we've been feeding them, both out of convenience and because it's what we've been spoon-fed in the marketing. And fortunately, more and more people are starting to wake up and realize that, you know, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be the most expensive diet on the shelf, or you don't always have to, you know, you don't have to home prepare it, but you just got to be a little bit more, you know, discerning and really do your research and chat with your vet and you know, work with the vet that you really trust, you know, and have them justify their reasons for their recommendations, because they, most of them will, you know?
Which is, well, it's hard though. I mean, it's hard to have that conversation with a vet. Even for me, I've had some awfully sticky wickets, like inviting other vets to be part of Cat Crazy and then saying, you know, there's just sort of a couple of bottom lines for me about cats. And I've developed them over 10 years of study, hundreds of hours of interviews and conversations off the air with some of the most amazing and marvelous vets and biologists and bioethicists and you name it, you know, people in the pet nutrition world. And you just really can't give dry food to a cat because it's inappropriate for the creature. And there's now not just one disease that we know for sure, type 2 diabetes, which is directly linked to feeding highly processed carbs to an obligate carnivore. But in the show after this tonight, Dr. Don and I are going to talk about something which you may not even have heard of yet, called a talk about preventive vet. I mean, my God, nutritional secondary hyperparathyroidism.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so just do not be giving dry food to your cats, y'all, because this is what can happen. Diseases that it takes you 5 minutes to say the name.
Right?
I can't believe I just sang that out.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Let's say hi to Robin. She's a great friend of Cat Crazy, and she had a great time on the show last week. Robin, welcome back to Cat Crazy. It's great to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Well, we can't get rid of you, and we love that. You're covered in cat hair, and we want to be covered in your cat hair. This is a great friend of the show, Dr. Jason. She does all of this cat rescue and foster, gave up her bathroom to have a kitty cam to show the foster kitties so people would adopt them.
Do you have a porta potty out back now? Or?
Yeah, she has a porta potty, or she uses the sink. Yeah.
I have a bucket out in the back.
Robin, I want you to tell Dr. Jason, because I just think it will be as big a delight for him as it was for Dr. Elizabeth Hodgkins last week, what your contract says. And this is a woman who is keeping these cats in her house. Cat litter, right. Cat food, vet visits, vaccinations. What does she want to do more than anything? Find a good home and get them in that home as soon as possible. But she has right. a part of her contract that I just so admire in you, Robin. Tell us what it is.
Well, we're called Kitten Associates is the new breed of cat rescue. And one of the reasons why is our contract states the very first item that adopters may not feed dry food of any kind. No prescription diet, science
diet. Isn't
that
great?
Dry,
isn't that great?
Anything. I don't care what it is. They can feed whatever they want as far as grain-free canned food, or educate them on how to feed a raw diet. A
right.
lot of people get out, and we're happy. You know, some people get angry, and some people love it.
Right.
But I just think it's an amazing stand to take, you know?
Well, I think it's really good because, you know, education is so important, you know,
yes.
and the awareness. Awareness is crucial, you know? And if nothing else, even if that person turns around and doesn't adopt from you because they don't believe in it, at least it plants the seed in their head like, well, there's got to be a reason why she's doing it. You know, let's look
That's
into
right.
that
right.
and see why.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
That actually
That's a really good
happened
point.
Recently because we had an adoption and the woman decided at the very last minute that she just couldn't afford to do the grain-free food and that she was going to adopt elsewhere. And
right.
I actually ran into her at our vet because she had adopted a kitten from a shelter and the cat was sick. And she said, you know what, I've been thinking a lot about what you taught me, and I'm going to start feeding my cat at least grain-free dry food, and maybe someday I'll go to canned. So it did make
progress.
An impact on
Good
her.
Good for you. Good for you. It's, you know, it is, sometimes it's just a drop at a time and one can get frustrated, but I always say we're kind of saving one cat at a time. When
yeah.
people kick kitty crack and they get their cats off this addictive, harmful, inappropriate for the species substance, they see the results. And then the important thing, I think, is to pay it forward, which is why I bring it up on the show with a lot of frequency, because people listening hear someone call back in, or Robin can say, you know, the cats stop shedding, they're shiny. They, if they were fat, they aren't anymore.
Right.
They sometimes are more affectionate. They're much more active. They're thin. I mean, you know, they're just like all these good things happen, right?
Well, you know, I mean, honestly, I mean, my cat, when I went over to England, I had to leave my pets behind because of the whole 6-month quarantine thing. I didn't want to do that. But so my cat stayed at my mom's and he got bullied by her other two cats and he grew up to 22 pounds on kitty crack.
Wow.
So when I got pretty quickly developed diabetes when I started treating his asthma, and I, because of my schedule, I wasn't able to get him onto a, you know, twice a day meal feeding
right.
and all the insulin that
right.
I knew I should be doing, but it was just really tough with my, you know, with my work schedule and then my intern schedule. But then finally I was able to get him on insulin, glargine and a high protein, low carb canned diet. And
nice.
He resolved after 2 years of trying to mess about with all these, you know, some of the natural things and trying to do it with a dry diet that just wasn't high enough in protein. He actually resolved and it's a true testament. He got in much better, much better weight.
And he came off the insulin. He's no longer diabetic.
Well, sadly, he's no longer with us because we lost him to lymphoma last year. But he was insulin independent for the last years of his life.
So, guys listening, if you have a diabetic cat, it's not your fault. But we all of us collectively as a society gave that cat the wrong food and encouraged it. And it's never too late, ever too late to go to using real meat food. That's all. It's never too late. It's all good. Robin, do you have any cool medical questions for Dr. Jason? He would probably love them.
Well, it's not a very cool question. It's more of an unfortunate question.
Oh, no.
Does he have FIP, your little guy?
Yeah. I've got a 10-month-old kitten, and we're trying to figure out what's the matter with him. And he just saw an eye specialist today, and she said maybe FIP. And I realize that it's very difficult to diagnose FIP.
Yeah.
But I wondered if there's any, like, revelations out there or any new tests or anything like that. Because If he does have it, it would be the dry form, which affects his nerves, and he has a little wobbly weakness. It's very subtle. As a matter of fact, all his symptoms, except for being fussy about eating, are pretty subtle. But we're trying to help him as much as we can, because I know that there is a treatment for it.
Yeah.
That may or may not work, but I want to try everything that we can for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's
before Dr. Jason answers, did you have a chance to listen to Dr. Donna's show about that new, brand new treatment that can, that is way different and better?
Yeah, the polyprenol immunosuppressant. Yes.
Yeah, I can't say that. You have to say that. I already said the other thing tonight. How much can you expect me to say?
Actually, what I'm really hoping that you do one of these shows is get, like, a bunch of hot single vets on so we can have a date show, because I just need to marry a vet. That's it. Because I feel like I live at my vet's office as it is.
You know, that's not a bad idea, Jason. Never mind that you're the preventive vet and we can save lives. We just need to learn all of your colleagues that are single.
Yeah,
and
but be careful.
I have to have a meetup.
A lot of the newer vets, you know, the ones that might be single, are coming out with six-figure debt. So do you really want to be saddled to someone
Good
with six-figure debt, you know?
Good point. Yeah, Rob, and he'll be working.
He'll answer all my questions.
Yeah, but how about the fact that 50% or something of the vet students now graduating are women? So that's a shrinking pool for you, honey.
Right.
Jason, do you know of anything she can do to better diagnose this FIP?
You know, sadly, not really. I mean, FIP, sadly, has been this condition where really diagnosis is more of what we would call a postmortem diagnosis. So it's so it's really, you know, it's necropsy based often, and it's a diagnosis of exclusion. So you test for the things, you know, other things that it could be, and as you rule those out, it makes it much more likely. And it's kind of the bane of the veterinary. You know, the feline veterinary profession and cat owners, you know, it's a disastrous condition, you know, and then it really just becomes a matter of just giving them the best quality of life possible.
Right. Now, like related to the preventative aspect of it.
Yeah.
I am beating myself up. There's something that maybe I could have done to provide a better environment or better nutrition or, you know, clean something better to
I think a lot of people get really upset about that when they get the diagnosis, but it really is the type of, it's a mutation in a very common virus. You know, it's a mutation in the coronavirus and either they're going to, they're going to get it or they're not. To the best of my knowledge now, that's still where we stand, is that
that's
there's really nothing that we as, you know, vets or that, you know, pet owners, you know, really can do differently to decrease the risk, you know, and hopefully there will be research coming down the pipeline where we'll learn some things that we can do from a prevention standpoint and also from obviously a diagnostic and therapeutic standpoint. But at this point, it still remains
a sad condition. Yeah, and elusive. Robin, we're really sorry that looks like what's happening with him. We need to go to a break, but we're really glad to hear from you. We know that if, as far as quality of life goes, no one's going to give him a better one than you. But let's just hope that maybe that isn't what it is and it's some other weird and unique thing. So thanks for calling, sweetie. And keep on listening.
Thanks for having me.
We love to have you call in covered in cat hair. Special friend of Cat Crazy, right at the top of the list. We're going to be right back. We're taking a quick break. I'm with Dr. Jason Nicholas, the preventive vet. We're going to be right back. This show is supported by the pheromone products Feelaway for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that replicate a natural signal of comfort in your pet's brain. Veterinary behaviorists often recommend Feelaway and Adaptil as stress relievers to help solve behavior problems. Pheromones can help adopted cats and dogs make the adjustment and comfort new puppies and kittens experiencing the fear and loneliness of leaving their litters. Feelaway diffusers and spray for cats help with feline behavior issues in a multi-cat household. Look for Feelaway and Adaptil at RadioPetLady.com, where there's a discount to buy them from Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Nordic Naturals has been providing people around the world with high-quality omega-3 oils for decades, with third-party testing for purity and freshness. Research has shown that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in omega-3 oils, and daily supplementation helps maintain optimal health for all members of the family. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family when you add Nordic Naturals Omega-3 fish oil to their bowls every day. VaxiCheck wants to know, are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? But is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxiCheck is a new blood titer test done right in your veterinarian's office while you wait. It shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases, distemper, parvovirus, and hepatitis, and needs revaccination or not. VaxiCheck should be used on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. Shelters should use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxiCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxiCheck for cats is coming soon. We are back, Dr. Jason Nicholas, the preventive vet, and I, and we would love it if you wanted to call in, 888-429-5471 with any questions you might have. Dr. Nicholas, you have this great quote on your website, The Preventive Vet, which I really recommend to people. People can also get your 101, say the title correctly, it's 101 great things you can do to prevent problems and illnesses and emergencies in your pets.
It is a mouthful because I'm a vet, not a marketer, but my new book is called 101 Essential Tips You Need to Know to Raise a Happy, Healthy, Safe Dog. And the cat version is coming out later this year as well.
Cool. Yeah. Well, your quote is, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, Benjamin Franklin.
Yep.
And I'm sure that the list of problems that you would see as a vet in a critical care facility or when you were in residency, you must have at some point thought, wow, half these animals maybe never even had to wind up here, if only. What were the if-onlys? What were the kind of top of your hit parade wish list of, if only they hadn't done this or had known to do that?
Well, I think if you ask most ER vets, myself included, I think that the bane of the ER vet existence as far as cats are concerned is the devastating condition called urethral obstruction or urinary obstruction.
Yes.
Which actually goes back to what we were talking about earlier with feeding dry versus wet food. I mean,
we
know that, getting more moisture into them, getting more water into them improves the overall health of their urinary systems and their urinary system. And one of the things it can do is it can help to decrease their risk for urethral obstruction.
Yep.
And so, if people are aware of these things, and I've got a 3-part blog series on my website that talks about awareness, preparedness, and prevention. And I've also got a survey for people who have been through it with their cats. And of the almost 95 people who have answered it thus far, probably about 80 to 85% of them had been feeding just dry food.
Wow.
But so when we look at things like, wet versus dry food, number of litter boxes, I mean, it's amazing how important the number of litter boxes, the location, whether they're covered versus uncovered, whether we're using scented litter versus unscented, can affect a cat's reliable use of the litter box and the amount of stress that they experience when they're going in. So urethral obstruction is really a condition that we see so frequently because of lack of awareness and lack of education. And so that, I think, is probably top of my hit list of the feline emergencies that I'd love to eradicate.
That's a really good one. And there's something that I had talked about with Dr. Donna last week when we were talking about different kinds of crystals and stones. And there was something I had never quite understood myself. And you've brought it up in talking about the number of litter boxes and how easily you can get to it and how freely you feel you can let go your stream. Because it isn't just a matter of taking in liquid. One of my Weimaraners nearly died from stones embedded in his bladder when he was a young boy. And it wasn't easy to diagnose. And so he spent a day and a half at the ER vet before they finally did exploratory surgery. And it was kind of really touch and go. So I thought, oh my God, he's going to get stones and all my life I'm going to be so worried. And I was for a long time and did lots of ultrasounds and for 6 weeks fed a vile food that was supposed to be for urinary tract problems. And the dog looked like he had cellulite all over. And then I looked at what it said on the label. It was made almost entirely of pork fat and brewer's rice. And I was told he had to be on that for his whole life by a lovely vet who also was trained at the Royal College in England. So in London, so it's like, really, Barry, come on. You didn't read the label either. However, it's the issue of how long the pee stays in the bladder. Now, talk about that a little, because that's something we don't all understand. We would think take lots of water, but we don't think and pee it out quickly because something happens to it in the bladder, right?
Well, it's all about sort of saturation and supersaturation, saturation points of minerals. And so if they're left in the bladder for a long enough period of time, all of these minerals will coalesce, or certain of these minerals will coalesce to form stones, or they, you know, or if the bladder lining is irritated, they'll form, you know, it'll produce an increase, it'll increase its mucus production, and that can lead to a mucus plug. So it's not always just stones that obstruct cats. It's, you know, what we call grit, it's mucus, it's stones, you know, blood clots. They can get strictures, any number of things, but certainly giving your cat, you know, making going to the bathroom the easiest thing in the world for your cat is the best thing that you can do for your cat, and also for your own, you know, financial well-being and your own, you know, peace of mind.
That's right, because those cats wind up running up bills of anywhere $1,000 to $2,000-$3,000 because they're often kept overnight, they're on all kinds of fluids, sometimes there's a surgery.
Yep, because it's not uncommon for it to recur once you, you know, pull the catheter, and then you're talking about surgery after it occurs three times. And but also, you know, something, it doesn't even always have to be just the urethral obstruction, because if you're not giving them a good environment to go to the bathroom, and, you know, inappropriate litter box elimination or aversion to the litter box is probably one of the main reasons why cats are relinquished to shelters and or euthanized.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, like the steps that will prevent a UO episode from occurring will also minimize the likelihood that you're going to give up your cat because they're going to be peeing or, you know, defecating all over your house.
And they're doing it because the litter box is not to their liking. I mean, you got to make a really nice powder room for them.
Exactly.
And you know, they don't want, if you're in a multi-cat household, you cannot have one litter box. It'd be like going into one of those public toilets. And I'm sure your girls, even as little as they are, Lottie and Margot, like when you go in the public toilet and like someone else didn't flush and there's old pieces of toilet paper on the ground. You're like, never mind, mommy. I just go in my pants or I'll wait till I get home or I'll just, you know, whatever. But it's like not pleasant. You want a friendly, clean place to go.
And the rule of thumb is what we call N plus one rule of thumb. So you should ideally have one more litter box than the number of cats you have. And very importantly, they should be in different locations. So different rooms, different levels of the house.
Yep.
Most cats, you know, Dr. Jackie Nielsen, who's a behaviorist out here in Portland, she had done some studies and demonstrated that most cats prefer an uncovered litter box and most cats prefer scented litter. And so, you know, but a lot of people, because, you know, the litter box is in the middle of the living room, they make it covered and they want the scent because it smells better. And then they're wondering why their cat's peeing on the carpet, you know?
Yeah, because you would rather too, because if... If that cat, you know, finds another cat in there when he goes to jump in into the dark space, it's like, woo, they're both freaked out.
Yeah.
Or the other thing is it holds all of the ammonia odor in there.
Yeah.
So they're trapped in there with this dreadful pee smell because, of course, the other thing about covered litter boxes, guys that are doing this, it's only for humans. It's like, I don't want to look at the duties in there.
Right.
I don't want to look or it keeps it like the stink away. It doesn't smell at all if you scoop it all the time.
That's right.
And,
much better.
And cat attract litter, which, by the way, I sent a whole envelope full of coupons for free cat attract litter to Robin at Covered in Cat Hair because cat attract and kitten attract have actually really helped a lot of cats at shelters and rescues to get back in the box. But Dr. Elizabeth also sent her, I think, 10 feel-away diffusers because Robin was already using them, but like that just really helps to lower.
Awesome. But it's really, I mean, I think feel-aways are
really
great.
Really effective.
I think it's a great thing to have in a lot of households where you're experiencing behavioral problems, including, you know, litter box aversion to decrease stress.
Yep, definitely. We're going to go to another break just because we got to squeeze one in. And when we come back, we have Sally waiting for us. And you too can call us 888-429-5471. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, Dr. Jason Nicholas, the Preventive Vet, and I are here for you. We'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. The company emphasizes giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition too. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they are genuinely dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy inside and out. This show is also supported by Platinum Performance Canine Wellness Formula, which is a comprehensive nutritional supplement for dogs. It provides a special blend of more than 55 nutrients to improve the health of each of your dog's 12 trillion cells. Healthy cells mean a healthy dog. In a scientific study of learning ability, the dogs who took Platinum Performance Supplement had better memory of new skills they learned compared to the control group of dogs that did not get Platinum Performance. To give your dog that mental edge, especially as she ages, go to RadioPetLady.com to get free samples and learn more. And there's a Platinum Feline formula for cats, too. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious and developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist cats and dogs with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com to call The Honest Kitchen for a free consultation about which recipe is right for your pet and to get free samples. We are back. You're listening to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hotchner. We're here with Dr. Jason Nicholas, the Preventive Vet, a very cool website to visit, by the way. Our number, if you have any questions or comments, is 888-429-5471, and we'd love to say hi to Sally. Is that Dr. Sally Foot?
Hi.
Hey there. Great to hear from you.
Great. Hi. Hi, I just wanted to say hi and ask a question, or maybe ask Dr. Nicholas to, if he could talk a little bit about this. I'm a veterinarian also here in Illinois, but one thing that is always a challenge is when people's cats are sick or ill, especially if they have breathing problems and it's an urgent situation, and they need to bring the cat in. But putting the cat in the carrier or trying to find ways to transport the cat to the veterinarian is really stressful.
Yes.
And so, Dr. Nicholas, if you might, talk about some of the ways that your staff or you might suggest perhaps to help, first of all, for people to recognize that their cat's sick, the classic hiders of disease, and then when they do need to bring them in, ways to maybe help make it the least stressful to the cat, because I know firsthand, too, sometimes that cat's really upset about just traveling. It's just going to make them a lot sicker.
Yeah.
That's a really good question.
And it can mask it, too, because when they come into the ER and, you've got to ascertain how much of that respiratory distress is related to the illness, the underlying illness, and how much of it is related to the stress of them being in the car or in the carrier or whatnot. I think, honestly, a lot of it starts before the condition even begins. I think it would be wonderful. I understand that people don't want their cat carrier out in the middle of their room because maybe it's unsightly or just doesn't go with their furnishing, but it's nice to have a cat that's accustomed to the carrier, and I think leaving it out, for them to see it, at least occasionally is part of that, doing things, like catnip in the carrier, doing things like, the feel away pheromone spray.
Yep.
So I think training cats to be comfortable in the carrier and comfortable in the car, is an important step that I definitely encourage people to do when their cats are very young or when they first get them, really try and get them used to it. As far as in the heat of the moment, when they're having say respiratory distress, or some other condition, whether, even if they're, completely out of it from something like a urethral obstruction or aortic thromboembolism or something like that, I think it's really a matter of trying to do what you can to make them, to minimize their stress. So getting, the pheromones and the catnip and whatnot in there, maybe wrapping them in a blanket if they feel more comfortable that way. But sometimes it's really just truly a matter of getting them to the vet as quickly as possible, but very importantly, calling ahead so that the team knows you're en route and giving them an idea of why you're coming. Because if you say, I've got a cat that's, in respiratory distress, or I've got a cat that's having trouble breathing, or I have a cat that hasn't peed in, 48 hours, that gives the team, the technicians, the front, the reception staff, the doctors, a chance to prepare and maybe not go in, maybe that means the doctor and the tech doesn't go into the room with the otherwise relatively stable emergency because they don't want to be in there when you arrive. They want to be ready. They want to have the oxygen cage ready. Maybe they want to have a little bit of sedation ready, because sometimes that's a huge help in getting to manage cats is to decrease their stress and just automatically get them into oxygen. You know, do your really, really quick initial triage, get them some sedation, and then get them in oxygen where they're breathing in an oxygen-enriched environment so you can improve their oxygenation, but sedate them so that you can actually slow down their rate of breathing and just calm them, because cats are just, they are little stress magnets. You know, they just, yep. they stress, and when they stress, there's not an awful lot you can do anyway. So if you can, that sometimes that hands-off approach initially, because, yeah. you know, can be huge. And if you can watch them from, you know, outside this oxygen cage through the glass and count their respiratory rate, see if they're improving, you know, you can start to formulate your diagnostic plan. And sometimes you can even, you know, really figure out what's going on. And certainly if the owner is called on the way in and said, I've got an asthmatic cat, you know, that's having trouble breathing. Well, you can be prepared, and maybe you've got your terbutaline and your inhaler ready. And then they come in, you give them those things, you get them in oxygen, you let them calm down. Or I've got a cat that's got known heart disease. You know, you're prepared maybe with your Lasix, you know, you've got your x-ray machine all fired up so that while they're in oxygen, you know, you're kind of setting the path for an easier, I think they don't the same sentence, right?
You're definitely making me feel adrenalized. I'm already like, oh my God, Sally, we got to do all this stuff quick. I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm listening to ER. It's like, oh my goodness. And it's great. All that preparation. I will say to both of you that there's an amazing cat carrier called Sleepy Pod, which was a sponsor of my NPR show Dog Talk, which was designed as a bed and the top comes off of it and it would look gorgeous in any decor. And it was designed for the owners, who were the designers and the makers of it, because their cat traveled everywhere with them. So it's a bed sort of first, and it's the only pet carrier that has ever passed the FAA crash test, whatever that crash test is for human infant car seats. It not only is this beautiful bed that's really cozy and really comfy, but the top can, you know, gets attached in a kind of like some clamps or something. Really cool looking. It's so cool looking.
I have to look that up, because that's
well, like, you know what would be great, really, Sally, because you're a specialist in behavior. And by the way, guys, here's a little cat coming out of the bag. Dr. Sally is going to be my co-host next week. So I'm very excited, because her specialty is behavior. It would be awesome for you to have in your office, and you can even sell them. Some vets sell them, especially behaviors, because when people come in with their cats in that horrible cardboard box or in that plastic thing with the, you know, the jail cell in the front, they see the Sleepy Pod. They're like, now that looks like a nice way to travel. That looks like going in style. And it does help. And my whole thing is overcoming the carrier barrier. I haven't thought of it for emergencies of a medical nature so much as physical emergencies, like evacuate for, you know, weather or, you know, I don't know, an earthquake or something. And then the cat, it just like you said, Jason, you spray with the feel-away spray, you play in there with a wand toy, and it is the bed, and it's much more attractive than most people's beds. I mean, it's really cool. Looks like something from the 22nd century. So that is a really good idea, because then my thought is people would bring their cats to the vet more, because one of the reasons they don't go until there is an emergency, right? And all of that would be reduced, and getting them used to the car, which cats are they're in it once or twice in their life for
they're
people that don't go to the
vet.
Yeah, which isn't necessarily the most fun thing in the world. Those are really good questions, Sally. Do you have like an oxygen chamber? Is that something regular vets have?
Well, I think it will vary a little bit, but just every veterinary clinic has an ability to deliver oxygen. And a lot of times there's different methods, and Dr. Jason can maybe talk a little bit more about that, being the emergency, you know, veterinary specialist to deliver oxygen. But if you don't have an actual chamber, sometimes we'll set the cat up like in a carrier that's shrouded around, you know.
Right.
But I really do appreciate, Doctor, you pointing out the, you know, the benefit of like calling ahead and saying, you know, my cat's ill, or I think he may be ill, and the staff can, you know, tell the client how to help make it less stressful for the cat to come in. Plus, then the staff is, you know, ready to go, because you're so right with our cats that, you know, you don't want to, an extra 5 or 10 minutes of sitting in the waiting room, you know, can really increase their anxiety level. And that could literally make a life or death
difference for them. And we may not be able to tell because they're sitting in that carrier. So,
oh, and especially if they walk into a waiting room full of dogs.
You know, advice there. It's excellent advice.
Yeah, nothing worse than a waiting room full of dogs. Dr. Sally, we are thrilled to hear from you. It's a great question. Maybe next week, Jason, you can call in and ask Sally a question. This is going to be so fun. Oh, my God. Yeah, she has a whole thing on low-stress handling, which is brilliant. Excellent. I mean, it's like a specialty of hers. Thank you so much for calling in, Dr. Sally Foote. We'll be talking again next week.
And thank you, Dr. Nicholas, for the information you're presenting. It's excellent. Awesome.
Thank you. So glad you're enjoying it. Take care, doll. Okay, so we're going to drop off for our last break. And when Dr. Nicholas and I come back, we're going to have to spend many weeks going down his wish list of things that we wish people would be more preventive about. We're going to be right back. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites with the newest technology. Scientific tests show that Vectra 3D creates a shield on your dog's skin that repels ticks and kills them fast and reliably for the entire month, while being safe for the people in your family. Older products do not last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Cat Attract litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box. Respiratory Relief litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family, too. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. Waruva Pet Foods are privately owned and made in a human food facility, so they're good enough for you to eat. All the flavors of Waruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands, are great for finicky little dogs and choosy cats, especially those who are trying to transition away from dry foods, which Waruva chooses not to make because carbohydrates are inappropriate for an obligate carnivore, and they believe your pussycat deserves to eat as well as you do. This show is part of the Radio Pet Lady Network, the best pet radio shows in the world. If you're enjoying this show, please check out all the other shows I co-host. Mondays, there's Cat Crazy with veterinarian co-hosts, followed by The Expert Vet with Dr. Donna. Second opinions on difficult medical problems. Tuesday is Cat Chat and Dog Talk with Dr. Sean, the natural vet, followed by my long-running NPR show, Dog Talk. Wednesday is Dog Travel Experts, exploring all the ways to get out of the house with your dog. Thursday, it's A Dog's Life with trainer Greg Cleva, followed by Pet Food Advisors with Dr. Sean Delaney, a veterinary nutritionist with advice about feeding your dogs and cats. You can listen to any previous shows in the podcast libraries at RadioPetLady.com. And I have a big surprise for you that in just a week, we're adding another amazing veterinarian to Radio Pet Lady Network. The show is going to be called The Pet Cancer Vet, and he really is one of the leading oncologists in the world, Dr. Jerry Post, who built the Veterinary Cancer Center in Norwalk, Connecticut, and he's going to be on every Tuesday night after Cat Chat and Dog Talk. So we have some really great minds joining us here, like Dr. Jason Nicholas. Okay, so what is the most worrisome thing that dogs come into the ER for and could be avoided? It's not bloat, is it?
Well, bloat is definitely one of them. Though we don't know, there's a lot of conjecture as far as what we can do to prevent bloat.
Right,
you know, it used to be
right.
thought that, you know, feeding them from an elevated bowl would prevent it. And now we actually think that might contribute to it.
Yes.
So fortunately, the AKC has started this bloat initiative thing. So hopefully we're going to be getting some good data over the next few years out of that. But I think bloat, the biggest thing with bloat is awareness, A, that it can happen to any dog, any breed, but also recognizing what it is, because time truly is of the essence, and there's really nothing you can do at home. They just need to be gotten to a vet to have stabilizing treatment and surgery. I think one of the biggest ones for me with dogs, and we're definitely getting to that time of year, is heat stroke.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, heat stroke is probably – we could probably completely eliminate heat stroke with awareness, and then people, changing the way that they do things.
Well, if they put them in a car when it's more than 66 degrees, right?
Correct. So, and that's obviously that's a huge one. You know, I mean, I had a post on my Facebook page this past Tuesday, and I was amazed and thrilled at the response. The illustrator, my fantastic illustrator, Chuck Gonzalez, back in New York, who did my book, he made an illustration for me, a graphic that says, friends don't make friends wait in hot cars. And it's a picture of a dog.
Oh, I love that.
Stress. And so I put it up on Facebook on Tuesday. Within 72 hours, it had been shared over 16,000 times and actually viewed by over 1.1 million people. So
wow. So people know that, or you are helping making them aware of this.
People are very passionate about this. There's a lot of people who recognize that this is a preventable problem. They're really passionate. And really, I'm using that to highlight the fact that, yes, you know, parked cars is a huge, huge issue and really is so easily prevented. And sadly, people do it with their kids, too. So, you know, really awareness is crucial from so many standpoints. And you're right. You know, a lot of people think if it's not over 90 degrees, it's fine to do it. And you're right. Like mid-60s can be hot enough and can get hot enough very quickly. The rate of rise in a car, in a parked car, is astronomically faster than most people would think.
It's an oven. There's all that glass, and all the sun has to do is move or come out of the clouds, and you're baking them under a broiler.
People think, you know, I'm just going to run into the store for 5 minutes, but of course,
I've heard that one.
That trainee cashier who takes, you know, five times longer than they should, or you run into that, gabby neighbor, you know, and you're actually.
Well, you have to do is go to Starbucks, Jason, because they're famous. How long can we keep you here so you buy those incredibly fattening things in the case while you're waiting for your drink? I mean, I actually busted somebody in East Hampton years ago when I was on Dog Talk and called the police, and a little white poodle in the car stressing him. His tongue was bright red and hanging out. The windows, by the way, were cracked maybe an inch. It wouldn't matter if the windows are wide open. It's still an oven. And so she finally came back, and the cops and she sort of came back at the same time. Well, I only went into Starbucks for 5 minutes. I said, first of all, I've been here 12 minutes. Second of all, Starbucks is never 5 minutes, and this dog should – you could actually take that dog out of the car, not like my Weimaraner. Why would you leave that little guy in the car? Pick it up, carry it in there.
And it's also important for people to recognize that it's not just the parked cars. There are dogs that have a higher risk of heat stroke. Any dog that's previously had a heat-related illness or a heat stroke is at higher risk. Puppies are automatically at higher risk. Older dogs, higher risk. Obese dogs, dogs with arthritis. Of course, the brachycephalic dogs, so the pugs, the bulldogs, you know, the Pekingese.
Arthritis? Why arthritis?
Yeah. Well, because think about it. If you've got an older dog with arthritis, they're working harder to walk. It's painful, so they're exerting more energy. Therefore, they're building up more heat. But then you've also got dogs with pre-existing heart conditions or respiratory conditions, like some of these really small breeds, like the Yorkies with collapsing trachea. Or these older,
or the Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, who all have these heart murmurs.
So all of these dogs are at higher risk for heat stroke. So it's not just parked cars. It's also these dogs that the first warm day of the year, and all of a sudden you take them out for, you know, that three-hour hike, and they're not adapted to it. Or, you know, these bulldogs that get walked at, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Florida, and then, you know, they're being rushed to the, you know, to the ER. And heat stroke is devastating, and it can be very quickly devastating. You know, and the treatment can be very expensive. I mean, you know, depending on how high they go, we can oftentimes get them back, but you know, that's several days in the ICU. You know, they get these secondary bleeding problems. So they're getting plasma transfusion, you know, they're needing all kinds of intensive care. So,
and then the other thing is the guilt thing definitely comes into it because yes, you could totally have prevented that. Yes, you caused it. And yes, you could have prevented it. So you have the guilt component where with a lot of things with pets, we say, no, that's okay. It's not your fault. You didn't know. But this one, you need to know. And it was your fault.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry. But, you know, own
it. Profession and society really, I think, shouldn't pull the punches because it really it's devastating. It's cruel. You know, and if you're aware of it and you're doing it, that's horrific. If you're not aware of it, then it's the responsibility of the profession and of society to get you aware of it. You know, and hopefully, you know, people change their patterns.
Yep. Well, this has been an amazing hour. It flew by. I do hope Andrea could find something fun to do with the girls. So this didn't seem too onerous. You live in Oregon, so it's not like super late for you.
We're
certainly hoping that we can sneak you back in again because it really that you have so much to impart and such a very special perspective on things. So it feels like a real treat and a privilege to pick your brain.
Well, thank you very much. I had a great time, and thank you for the platform to, you know, get this information out to your, to, you know, to people, to pet owners, to listeners.
I hope that you'll get those 1.1 million people to listen to the podcast of this, right? Yeah. I mean, if they could read about it, they might as well hear the real man talking about it. I mean, that's a lot more fun, right?
I agree.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. You guys, stay tuned. Do not click away from where you are. You could be on whatever device you're on listening, whatever thing connects you to the World Wide Web. In just a moment, I'll be on, like a few minutes, be on with Dr. Donna Spector, the expert vet. We're going to be discussing some really interesting topics. Hope you enjoy them. Tomorrow night, Cat Chat and Dog Talk with Dr. Sean, the Natural Vet. Bye for now.